We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and the Eurostep Podcast Network. I am Ty Windisch. I am joined, as always, by my just lovely co-host, Rohan Kadi, and both of us were joined by fellow Blue Wire podcaster, Matt Brooks, host of the Clear Out podcast dedicated to covering the Brooklyn Nets. We wanted to preview the season series and the game, opening night, ring night, as I reminded Matt, that's what it's called for the Bucks. Although Matt was very cool, so I didn't need to give him that crap, but I did. But we dove into these teams, their changes, how they match up, and just really had a fun, enjoyable conversation. So check this out and make sure to follow Matt on Twitter at MattBrooksNBA. Subscribe to the Clear Out wherever you're listening to this podcast. And, you know, I know you don't always want to hear net stuff, maybe as a Bucks fan, but trust me, this is good content. Matt enjoys the Bucks and Giannis, so go check it out and enjoy this conversation.
All right, everybody, welcome to the official crossover episode of the Eurostep podcast and the Clear Out podcast, here today to preview the upcoming Brooklyn Nets Milwaukee Bucks opener to the NBA season. I'm joined by the two co-hosts of the Eurostep podcast. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Good. Very good. Excited to be here. Excited for what we know as ring night, what everyone else knows as the opening to the NBA season. Excited to be insufferable about that because I'm a little worried about how this game is going to go with the Bucks injury report, but excited to podcast. And thanks for putting this together, Matt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, thank you guys for joining me. And yeah, speaking of injury reports, like there's a certain somebody missing on the Nets side of things that, you know, like Rodney Hood, Kyrie Irving, I'm not sure what's it's big or loss. So, yeah, I mean, I think a good place to start is kind of like I want to talk a little bit about the overviews of like what these two teams did in the offseason. And like for me, like let's start with the Bucks because I've talked enough about the Nets. I've done so many podcasts about, oh, what does Paul Millsap look like? Ugh. So I want to hear about kind of like what you guys think of the offseason that Milwaukee had.
Well, we went into this offseason, like we did a whole free agent, like live free agency show, and we were a little underwhelmed at first because there was nothing like big. Obviously, there was the PJ Tucker news about him leaving, going to Miami, and then you're like, oh man, he actually wanted to stay, and then you just get mad at ownership and all that sort of stuff. Bobby Portis is re-signed, obviously, which is great news. We wanted both of those to re-sign. We got Bobby, so that was great. Then we got like, who was the next signing, Ty? It was Shemi, right?
Yeah, after
the next signing.
I proposed him as a name left on the live pod. This is near the end of the four-hour live pod, so we're all a little just disorganized. Rohan is like on the border of cussing me out for even suggesting it. And 10 minutes after we sign off the pod, it breaks that they signed Shim. He's since come around a little, but go on, Rohan. I had to set the record straight on that one.
It was very unfortunate timing. We were wondering who they're going to use their mid-level exception on, because one of the big news about Bobby Portis is that he did not sign for the mid-level. He signed for his extension, which is like 120% of what his previous contract was. It's weird. So they still have their mid-level exception to use. We're like, oh, who's it going to be? Patty Mills, we were really hoping for. Oh, he goes to Brooklyn. Is it going to be like some guy like maybe Paul Millsap? Oh, he goes to Brooklyn. It's just a lot of stuff like that. And we're just like, okay, what's going to happen? Then the George Hill news comes through. He gets waived by the 76ers, which was pretty obvious because he had a partial guarantee on his contract that he got from the Bucks because he was there two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. We were really excited about that because one of the main struggles that Milwaukee had later in the postseason last year was they had to play a lot of Jeff Teague minutes just out of pure necessity because he was the only competent or really the only backup point guard on the roster. So upgrading from George Hill, upgrading to George Hill from Jeff Teague, we were very, very excited about. Later in the offseason, we get the Grayson Allen trade, who's very newsworthy because he just got extended today, 2 years up to $20 million.
What do you guys think of that? Sorry to cut you off, but what do you think of that extension?
We're feeling pretty good about it. We were thinking it's going to be a little bit of a competition this season between him and Dante DiVincenzo because they were both up for extensions. My thinking was that only one of them was, or neither of them were going to get extended, and that one of them was going to be on the team next year. It was sort of like a competition between the two because Dante, even though he's proven like a decent bit in his time, it's just he's been so injured. He's still injured. We have no idea what's going on. No timeline has been given. And so we were really excited about Grayson. In preseason, he looked great, but also it's preseason. You can't really take a whole lot from that. So getting this news of the extension was a little surprising. I was very surprised. It was. It could end up being a bargain deal if he performs really well. He's a good fifth starter. If it doesn't pan out, Ty, you were talking about this earlier. It's just, it's tradable, right, Ty?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, were it not for Dante's injury history, and one that happened in the playoffs was the third time he's missed significant time with a foot or ankle injury, once at Nova, once in his rookie year, and then obviously missed everything but the sweep of the Miami Heat in the first round last year, which was the reason Jeff Teague is playing against Brooklyn and Atlanta and Phoenix. So I think if it were not for the injury history, you could pretty much say Dante is kind of the defensive plus Grayson is the offensive option. As much as the Bucks have tried to make Dante a combo guard, the shooting hasn't really been there. The ball handling's a little iffy. And there's this thing out there on Twitter that he's a really good finisher, I think because he's bouncy. He's not that bouncy attacking the rim, and he's like a notoriously problematic finisher. Like every Dante drive to the rim is an absolute journey. So Grayson offers a lot more offensively. Dante, when he's out there, offers more defensively. But I think even if the Grayson fit isn't as good as I think it is, I'm very excited about him kind of unlocking some offense for that Bucks group that really needed offense more than defense. If you look at the other four guys, I think, especially offensive spacing. Even if it doesn't work out, I mean, we've seen Horst pivot out of these bad deals before. I mean, by the deadline, the DJ Augustine contract seemed like absolute terrible. Like it was going to cost them for years.
It was bad in the moment, I got to tell you.
I liked it in the moment.
The second it happened, I was like, oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
it aged even worse than I think your first thought on it was. But that flips plus DJ Wilson for PJ Tucker. And basically they flip a late first, I think like the third or so last pick in the first round for the first pick in the second round, which is almost better for the Bucks given the Stepien rule considerations and salary slot, although they ended up trading that pick too. But I just think it's not going to be a big issue even if it doesn't work out perfectly. Yeah. And if it does work out perfectly, then it will probably be a discount because it's just pretty rare for, you know, a good starter on a very good team to not get the bag from somewhere. It just always happens. So I was actually a pretty big fan of that deal. And I love the trade when it happened. I mean, Sam Merrill scoring 30 in a preseason game aside, I think the 60th pick from a year ago in a couple seconds for a guy who's going to be a starter is always going to be a pretty solid deal.
Yeah, I love that deal when it happened. It's funny. I kind of liked a lot of what Milwaukee did this offseason. Like, in a way, like it wasn't like the flashy, like, this team just won a title and they're going to follow it up by signing Rodney Hood and Semi Ojeleye. Like, on paper, that's not really like what you'd expect, I guess, from a team defending a title. But I really thought about it. I like the Rodney Hood deal when it happened. He's already hurt, and we'll see if, like, we'll just see. It's really a question of, can he get out there again? You know, kind of like the Otto Porter deal in Golden State. So he's a mix, but even like Semi, I kind of like him as just another body. Like, as we kind of talk about this Nets matchup, like, I think that's another guy you can throw out there and just like cause havoc, be just in the way and or just be a couple of fouls, really.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they need someone to just like deter Kevin Durant. No one can stop Kevin Durant, but like, can you stand in front of him and get your body into him and at least like maybe piss him off a little bit? Like, that's pretty much that's what they did last time, and it worked. I mean, you got to get physical, I think, with KD. It worked well enough. He made every shot except for like the very last one of the series, and that's all you can hope for if you're playing against Kevin Durant.
He was gassed. Yeah, I mean, part of it was they were playing him like every minute of every game, but like, I don't know. They made it tough. Like, it's funny. I'm already spoiling it a little bit. I didn't hate the Nassus on KD in the preseason.
Oh, there it is.
Thank you.
That's where we're starting, by the way. We're what, like 9 minutes into this podcast, and the first name I mentioned on the Bucks is Thanasis. I haven't said anything about Giannis yet, but Thanasis.
This is right up Rohan's alley.
Oh, this is music to my ears. It's
you look pretty good.
He looks all right. He looks passable. Passable is what I'll say.
I wasn't sure because like you lose PJ, and I just was like, I don't know what it's gonna look like. I guess Giannis is gonna have to take that on, which I think is a nice segue into matchups and everything like that. But I didn't hate it. I'm like, all right, throw a couple of minutes of Thanasis at KD. It's not going as poorly as I thought it did, or I thought it would go. But I let's talk about matchups, like how the Bucks are gonna match up with the Nets. What do you guys kind of see going on? Because I actually think it's way more simple this year.
I want to just like not to dodge the question. I want to get to it. Who do you think is going to start for the Nets? Because obviously Brooklyn had an interesting offseason. I really like the Patty Mills thing. I didn't love like Millsap or Aldridge. And I do think like, I think Millsap is more of a five now. So I was looking at this today because there's like some over-unders out there or like conference rankings that had the Nets like very low. And it's like, well, they're probably going to be without some guys and they're not going to try. And I was like basically doing a lineup without KD with Harden to be like, look, like, Their random vets and Harden is like a hella good lineup. Like, they're not going to be fifth in the East. Like, they're still going to – it's James Harden. They're still going to be really good. But I was having trouble with, like, the four, right? So it's like Mills, Harden, Harris. And then when KD is healthy, it'll be KD and I assume Blake. Or is Bruce Brown in there? Like, so that was my question. Like, I guess that would probably be what I assume is the starters. And I haven't watched too much Brooklyn. I missed the one Nets-Bucks game. But are we assuming it's going to be – Is Patty starting or is Bruce Brown starting?
You probably go. So your starters. The weird thing about losing Kyrie, which I also we have not even mentioned that we I've not,
I don't
really
wanna,
buried
I don't
the lady.
Do too much. I mean, everyone. I think everyone
please,
has heard
please
everything.
No, please none. Yeah. Please none. I can't do another second of it. I'm sorry.
There. He's not there.
He's not
That's
there.
All we need to know.
I have no interest in. And if I cannot say Kyrie Irving's name for the next 8 months until he plays basketball again, I'm very, very excited to do that on this podcast. I've got nothing else. But the nice part about not having he who shall not be named in the lineup is that you have two guys that I think were starter caliber, depending upon the lineup or really depending upon the opponent, in Joe Harris and Bruce Brown. And you can start both those guys now. So now you're going to go James Harden, let's say Joe Harris at the two, Bruce Brown at the three, KD at the four, probably Blake at the five, especially because I think they like Blake out there as a guy that you could throw at Giannis. He'll do an okay job. He'll also just be a guy that can take charges, which is like huge for them, just to make Giannis think twice about going into the paint. Ultimately, it won't matter because I bet you after a summer of just kind of decompressing, Giannis will be very prepared for Blake Griffin. I'm just going to put that out there. I don't know if it's going to go as swimmingly as it did in certain spots last year, but I think that's probably the lineup you're going with.
Yeah. So, I mean, unless Rohan, you want to take a first stab, but I think we would see Giannis starting on KD against that group.
Ooh.
That's starting. I don't think he's going to do it all game, but I mean, Lopez on Blake, I think is pretty obvious. It's one again where if they were still starting PJ Tucker, it would make a lot of sense to do Giannis on Bruce Brown and let him roam. But I think you're going to want Grayson on Bruce Brown, Drew on Harden, and they love Chris on shooters. So I think Chris on Joe Harris is going to be the move. Like Chris, I think in some circumstances has regressed a little bit as a defender, just with the, like when he first popped out and when basketball nerds started to love him, he was like a true 3-and-D guy. Now he has more offensive responsibility. And when you get that, it's really hard to have the same energy on defense every play. So they'll use him on KD from time to time, but I bet they start with him on Harris because like he gets Harris, he gets Duncan Robinson. Like he's good at sticking with those guys defensively. So then you're kind of left with Giannis on KD, at least for the beginning. Although I wouldn't be surprised if we get a defensive sub. Like this is where I think the Bucks have talked a lot about Semi Ojeleye. I think he would get some burn at that. I think they would do Giannis at the five and let him quote unquote cover Blake or Bruce Brown and mess with that as a second unit. But without him, we probably will see some Thanasis on KD again. What are your thoughts, Rohan? Do you agree?
I mean, yeah, I think I agree. We're going to see a lot of Giannis on KD to start. But what we saw last year is that the Bucks like to do everything by committee. So you're going to be switching matchups all the time. Giannis is going to have time on him. Drew's going to have time on him. Chris is going to have time on him. We talked about this during the series last year. You just have to give him different looks, because if you just give him the same look every time, he's going to murder you. I mean, he's going to murder you anyway, but he's going to, it's going to be less intense of a murder. Potentially.
You're trying to make him shoot like 45% to get to 28 points instead of shooting like 65%. Like that's really,
exactly.
I mean, after that series, I don't think you could find people with more respect for what KD can do than Bucks fans. Cause I think we're all like the highlights from the series are going around again in advance of this game. And you would expect maybe it's like some gloating. Every Bucks fan is like, I was shitting my pants the whole time. I can't believe they won that series. I still can't believe
broke me.
I think it broke all of us a little bit. So that's what I think. But I agree with Rohan. That's a great point. Like, I think they're going to throw all the defenders they can at KD, at least all the ones that they trust, just because I do think that was kind of key in tiring him out, was like giving him all these different looks. Like, someone, like, they don't have the most physical guy, which would be PJ. So it wouldn't shock me if Drew even, I don't know if you mentioned that, Rohan, Drew might get a couple shifts too, because he is their most physical on-ball defender this year, certainly.
Yeah, the problem with Semi is just, I don't know, like we're just talking about him like we're assuming he's going to be good. And that's just my issue, is that we don't know that yet. we haven't seen it yet. Like, he wasn't great in his time with Boston. He was good in certain situations. I think a lot of Bucks fans have just taken this idea of Semi Ojeleye being a great defender in the sense that Boston, whenever they played Milwaukee, like Brad Stevens would always just throw
Semi Ojeleye. It's on his Wikipedia page. He held Giannis to something in some series like 4 or 5 years ago. That's one of the 25 sentences on Semi Ojeleye's Wikipedia page. So it's got to be true.
Yeah. I just don't want to, get too excited about it, because I don't know if it's going to be a thing yet. I don't know if that makes me a downer, or just, I want to wait. I want to see it before I like make judgment on it.
It feels kind of like Torrey Craig last year, where like Torrey Craig's on the roster. And then it's like, by the end of the year, you're like, oh yeah, Torrey Craig was on the Bucks at the end of the year, only because they're playing the Suns. But it's like, that's a guy they like got, you know, whatever, they got him out of there essentially, even though everybody like really liked it. I remember I really liked the Torrey Craig move for them earlier in the year. And then by the end, it's like, oh, PJ Tucker's in here. Like, this makes a little more sense. Like, that's your stand-in. That's your like guy that's going to guard KD. So I wonder if the Bucks are like, there's going to be a move in the middle of the season. You guys are always really active in the middle of the year. It sort of feels like that's the move at this point. You know, Mirotić over the, I guess PJ, like there's just always seems to be a move.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident there's going to be a trade or a buyout. It gets more difficult just because they're running out of tradable salary slots. Like, it took DJ Augustine and DJ Wilson to get in PJ Tucker, and now it's like pretty much all the guys they have left on sizable contracts are like pretty important players. I mean, Pat Connaughton, when he signed his deal, I was hoping that would be flipped ASAP. And now I'm like, please don't trade Pat C.
Yeah. This
$4.5 million. Like, he's one of six guys who could play by the end of the Brooklyn series.
Right.
Let's keep him around. So it might be a buyout. They do have that 15 spot open, and they're going to keep it open, I think, until buyout season, most likely, for tax reasons. And cause I just don't think there's anyone around that tickles their fancy enough to use on it right now. It could be an emergency big. Like, if Brook Lopez misses 2 weeks, I think they're just going to have to go sign some big man. Like, they're just going to need that. They've been pretty lucky with his health, but I would assume that there is a move coming. But I think people think that about the Nets too, right? That there could be another move incoming. What do you think the Nets need? I know it's a weird question, and I don't even want to go into Kyrie trades. I know it's been floated. I feels like it would be far off, if anything. But like, if we're talking about like buyout guys or like, you know, guys on the trade block, what do you think they would look to get? Because I feel like they have ball handling, they have shooting, they certainly have enough bigs. Is it just more defense, or is that James Johnson?
I think it's ball handling, believe it or not.
Really?
I think it's ball handling. I was really thinking about it today. Cause you look at Patty Mills, you're like, all right, there's your backup point guard. But it's like, I really like Patty off ball more.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, you know, give the ball to Patty Mills and be like, hey, let's just run like a whatever high pick and roll in the half court.
Yeah.
However many times you can do little things. Like if you run certain sets for him in transition, that's fine. But even then, like there was a couple of plays, granted it's preseason, but they ran double drag, which is just the two screens in transition. And he came off it and it was just like, he kind of got nowhere. He's not really like great at pressuring the rim. He never has been, especially now at 33. Yeah. So it's like, I like him more kind of just being off ball and being a threat that way. And then you look down the line, it's like, okay, who's next? Is it Bruce Brown? I don't really want Bruce Brown running the offense.
Yeah.
I guess you're going to have to start playing out of your bigs. So it's like, maybe you play out of LaMarcus in the post or the mid post area, or you play like out of Millsap at the top of the key. And it's like, these are all solid options, but it's like, that's unconventional and it's not sustainable. Like, you can't run your backup bench offense out of like Paul Millsap at age 36. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think they need ball handling. I really do. And I think that would be what I would look for. Now, granted, like, that all depends on what happens with this Kyrie thing, which is really just, hey, we're going to sit around and wait and just hope this guy shows up vaccinated one day. Yeah. Like, that's literally what's going on. So in that sense, if that's what you're waiting for, I would look for it. And they have a couple TPEs and stuff, like they have flexibility to do what they need to do. It's just, I think they're going to roll out and see what this group looks like first.
That definitely makes sense.
Yeah. You go through the roster and it's just like, out of if you take James Harden and Patty Mills, who are starters, like, who's the other ball handler? Like, Javon Carter? Like,
oh, please. No. I love Javon Carter.
He's a great defender. Just you don't want him initiating offense.
No, you do not. You do not want him coming off, you know, even coming off whatever, like off ball. Well, I guess he's
gotten a little better as a shooter, right? That was big for him. I know that he started.
Yeah. Oh, he's been great. He's been killing it off. He's been, you know, it's not like crazy movement, but he's like, he's been able to do things where he's moving back and forth from the corner. And it's like, oh, okay. I didn't know Javon Carter had that. He had a step back too. Ooh, in preseason. Okay. So it's been nice, man. It's been pretty cool. But that's kind of where their weaknesses are right now, is just that, you know, I guess you could split up KD and Harden, but I don't know. Like, do you really want KD like having to basically play backup point guard for a large portion of the season?
Probably not.
Like, that's ridiculous. There's no reason to do that. Why would you not want to use a guy that's that good off ball, off the ball? Like, that's ridiculous. That's the whole appeal. He makes everything easier around you. He gets 30 and he's just coming off pin downs over and over. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I guess I want to kind of cycle back a little bit and get the flip side of the who's guarding who question. So I think Blake on Giannis makes a lot of sense. I would assume they're going to mess with the Bruce Brown on Lopez stuff a little more, but where do you see the rest of the matchup shaking up for Brooklyn's side?
Probably Millsap will come in there and pick up some Giannis reps. I don't think we'll see James. I mean, maybe James Johnson comes out there, but I think they're going to try to play like their regular rotation. I don't think they're going to be like, hey, let's pull out our third string, whatever forward center, the 19 of them yeah, we seem to have on this roster. There's so many of them.
Is this a rule if KD's on a super team? Because the Warriors were like this too. Is this like, does the league send a memo like, Jay, you got KD and other perimeter stars, you need a third of your roster to be centers, or it's just not fair?
Yeah, it's just him saying, I really want to play the three, and I'm going to do anything I can to not play the four. And I think they're still going to start him at the four. No, I don't know, honestly. But yeah, so I think Millsap will probably get some Giannis minutes. We'll see how that looks. I don't know. we'll see.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we have to talk a little bit about how Giannis looks in preseason. I'm sure you guys have done it a ton. I was watching one of your most recent episodes on YouTube, and you guys were getting into it, and I was like, I need to shut this down so I don't get any of your thoughts on this, because I got a lot of them. And then so that's what I would have: Blake, Millsap on Giannis. For Drew, I would probably go.
It starts to get a little interesting.
I think I'd go Harden. The perimeter defense has been bad. And I mean, it's preseason. I get he's not trying, but he's just really declined as a perimeter defender. Harden has really declined in that area. And then I think off the bench, maybe you go Javon Carter, but mostly to be like somebody that's going to pressure him 94 feet. Drew's, I think, bigger. Again, Javon's got just really quick hands. Like, it just, he is so fun to watch. I love watching good defenders, and he is just like a treat. So I think that's what I would do. And then for Middleton, I actually really like what Bruce Brown did in the playoffs against Middleton. I thought he was a pretty big factor in, I think that was game 5, I believe, where Bruce Brown was mostly on him in that series, in that second round series. So I like that. KD is a good option for Middleton. Can't go wrong with that. I don't hate Claxton either. I actually, if you want to get, if we're going to go a really niche here, I don't hate Nick Claxton grabbing some reps on Chris Middleton.
Do we think he's going to play a lot with this roster and this rotation? That is so interesting to me. Rohan's been pulling his beautiful hair out saying they got another big. Is Nick Claxton going to play?
He should.
I think so too.
There is a lot of weirdness going on, I think, between the Nets and Nick Claxton. There's like him being on the summer league roster and then he's suddenly not on it, and he shows up into camp. Like, he was not in good shape. Like, they had their first preseason game against the Lakers, and he like couldn't do more than like 3 laps up and down the court. And it was just kind of like, wait. For me, I've been a big Nick Claxton believer. And granted, he looked great in the last preseason game. So he's somebody that gets into shape really quickly. But for me, it's like, that's kind of weird for you to be in your contract year and you have this big opportunity with this team. Like, I don't know. I would just be in good shape.
It's not like they don't have a lot of guys who are jockeying for minutes of those positions.
They don't have any athletes. Athletes.
The 4 or 5 minutes. Obviously, they have a lot of guys there, but no, I think his skill set is very unique for them.
He's their best wing defender. He's like one of their really, I mean, I don't want to slight KD. So him and KD are the only like wing defenders on this team. And that's kind of why I like you can throw Nick at Middleton, because he's not going to like blow by Nick.
No.
And he's got the length to really bother that high release point. So I don't know. I love that matchup. Like, that's why I'm like, I would try to just give him as many minutes as possible, because he is such a different look. Like, I get it. On offense, he's just a center that rolls to the rim and they like their guys to be able to shoot. But defensively, like, he's just a different look than anybody. So yeah,
I almost feel like, I don't know if this is factoring into the Nets, but I remember like he was seen as such a defensive stopper, and they tried him on Giannis and he just wasn't strong enough for Giannis when Giannis was in the post. And I felt like his minutes really deteriorated after that. But I do agree with you that I think he would probably make more sense guarding Chris than Giannis, especially, and we can get into a broader Giannis convo, which I'm always down to do. But I think what changed for Giannis the most by the time Claxton was trying to guard him later in that series is, and it happened during that Brooklyn series, this finally fully happened. It was like, okay, I'm just going to play like a center. Like I'm going to play like Shaq played, right? Like I'm going to post up. I'm going to roll and pick and rolls off of Chris and Drew. I'm not going to try and initiate anymore because Blake and multiple other guys are there every time.
And shoot, like pull up threes.
Yeah, we're done with all of that. Like I'm just going to, I'm going to be a bully. And suddenly no one could guard him that he played for the rest of the playoffs. I mean, and really no one anywhere. I mean, if DeAndre Ayton couldn't do it in the post, I don't know how many guys really can. And I think that's why, you know, coming into this preseason, my thing with Giannis was like, I hope he's still doing that because everyone wants to be LeBron, right? Everyone wants to be a perimeter player. It's that's how stars are. I mean, even the best center in the game who just won MVP initiates offense for his team. Like no one likes to do the unglamorous center stuff, but I'm still not mad about Giannis's jumper because A, how could you ever be? And B, his very first possession of the preseason was posting up Darius Bazley and taking him to the rack. He's still rolling in pick and roll. It's just he also looks more comfortable with his jumper and getting to his spot. So it's kind of been the best of both worlds in seeing the jumper look confident and also seeing him not totally going away from
right.
Also, like I can get this hook and be wide open at any point from 4 feet away.
It's he's just such optimizing an, what he can do within the realm of the offense. That's basically it.
He's just such an egoless superstar that he's not somebody I worry about. I love Giannis, by the way, which is like such a conflict of interest. I feel like for everybody that's like a Nets fan, I love Giannis. I'm not going to, for all the Nets fans listening, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I love Giannis. I think he's amazing. And just seems like a good person. But he like, I don't look at Giannis and I'm not like, he's just egoless. I don't think that he's going to be like, oh, cool, I can shoot jumpers now. That's all I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Like every single game. I think he's just such a smart, like he's just a smart, polished player that he is going to have that balance. But yeah, that jumper's looking good, man. It's one motion. He's shooting when he's on the way up. It's looking good, man. I'm kind of buying it right now.
It is. I don't want to get like we talked about this. We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves.
Rohan's again, the realest of the two of us. If you can,
I'm trying because I don't want to set up myself for failure and just disappointment and heartbreak. But I want to see it in like games that matter. And given we've seen like the jump hooks and stuff in the playoffs, so like the ultimate games that matter, we have seen that. So I'm not worried about that. It's like the little mid rangers, the little Dirks, the little turnaround fades. Like that's what I'm like, okay, let's see if you can put this into practice. And if he can, I'm not going to doubt him and say like, oh, he can't do it. I'm just like, okay, let's see before I pass judgment. But if he does, like you were saying, Matt, it's not like he's not going to be like searching for those. He's not going to be hunting for those. It's going to be more like counters to like, oh, you're going to block out this area. Okay, I can go to this now instead of like maybe getting into a charge. I'm going to be doing stuff to counter what the defenders are giving me so that I have more options when I'm in the paint area, when I'm in like the restricted area. I just have more stuff to go to if I'm Giannis. It's just, I don't know. I don't want to get too ahead of myself. But it looks good. It does really look good. Like the shooting percentages in preseason were just, they were stupid. gaudy and stupid.
Somebody made a graphic. You can't make a graphic with a three-game sample.
Like
He shot the worst from free throw out of the three areas, which is hilariously honest. But I was like, let's not make graphics with the shooting percentages like from six and seven shots, I think, respectively.
Mid-range. 74% from mid-range and 66% from three. Like, no, that if you think that's going to hold up, you're an idiot.
Yeah,
that's just
for sure.
It's not going to happen. Can you get like your 3-point percentage to like 34?
36 is the number. If he's 36, I don't know.
36 might be a lot. But the thing is, I'm not even concerned about that. Like you're talking about earlier, Matt, in terms of like pull up threes, that broke me during the series because he was just going like trying to match shot for shot with KD. I was like, what are you doing? This is not like a winning formula. Which is why, again, I had multiple mental breakdowns. It was just a lot of like, can you get that mid-ranger down? Are you going to work on your like catch and shoot threes if like Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday are initiating? That's what's more important to me than like pull up threes. They're not, it's not his game. Like it's asking like KD to like go do post hooks and stuff like that. It's just, it's not their game. Like sure, if they want to, they can do it. But like, why? You can do so many other things so much better.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I like the shot. I mean, the little, like, if he can hit the turnaround, like, 15-footer or even just the face-up jumper, like, the Nets were giving him a lot. It is just like, I don't know what the Nets do. It doesn't even need to be a high percentage, just enough to make the Nets think where it's like, okay, we've watched this guy hit like four straight jumpers in Blake's face. And now it's like, I think we might need to have him, even if it's not a hard closeout, like close out a little bit, even just put 1 foot forward in front of him.
And that's when you're
done. And that's when it's done. Yeah. Like, I just don't know it. It like, I've been watching Giannis for a while, and I just have never seen him look like that, where it looked natural. Like it really truly looked like it was a natural jump shot. I couldn't believe my eyes. Yeah. I was just like, we'll see if it translates. I'm usually really good at tempering expectations with preseason, but I think like everybody else that, and I'm sure you guys are probably like trying to, you know, keep this at bay, but like everybody else on Twitter, I was like, oh man, this is a problem. Like, I don't know. There are two things that are getting in the way of the Nets title chances: the New York City COVID mandates and Giannis Antetokounmpo taking jumpers. Like, those are the two things right now. And boy, I don't know what you do about either of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got it exactly right. I mean, and just to your point, this is something I see a lot with Giannis with different things. Like, there were people who were saying after the finals, like, he's always been this good. It's just he got a lucky competition and his team got better. No, he was never as good as he was in that playoff run ever. And you're exactly right on the jumper, too. I mean, there were games when he would, like, make them. The Lakers game in L.A. when he put the crown on is probably the biggest example.
Yeah.
But the shot never looked that good, and it would be like the next night he'd be like 1-for-6. Like, I don't know if he's ever shot three games in a row as good as he shot. And again, it was like 6 or 7 shots or something. But like the fact that he, like, it looked good and it looked consistent, that's the starting point with Giannis's shot. And they went in for three games in a row is huge. But I totally agree with you. Like, you really just have to keep teams honest. That's all Giannis's jumper needs to do. Like, you could see it in some of these games. Like, I think he started 2-for-2 in maybe the Mavs game. And defenders start to close out. Like, Maxi Kleba, poor guy, is like, oh, I guess I have to go stand around him. And Giannis is like, oh, this is a dunk. Thank you. Like, there's like the defenders who can guard him in the post can also not guard him on the perimeter almost all the time. So it really is. It's like, it's great to, you know, get 3 points, obviously. but it's a lot better to get like 12 in a row because you're trying to guard him on the perimeter, and you just, then you can't keep up with him, or you're sending help and he's progressed a lot as a passer, and the Bucks have gotten better at putting capable offensive players around him. So that's really, you know, we try not to, even I, the less realism one of the two of us on the Eurostep podcast, try to not get too caught up, because I mean, they won a title with him not shooting jumpers, like they can right. do it. But it is like very tantalizing to think about, like, oh, that's really like, then you're not saying he's as skilled offensively as KD, and certainly in as many ways, but it's that same issue with like the elite perimeter players of like, you know, he found out how to beat the barrier. Rohan doesn't like the word wall, the barrier. Giannis got away through it. But you just, you can't do stuff like that to those players, right? Like the Bucks saw it up close in Kawhi. Like there's no one strategy. Like he can beat you so many ways. And that's when it's like, oh my God, this guy's not even 27 yet. And he's, the bag is deepening.
Dude, he's the, he, I mean, that's what, again, as somebody who just is a big fan of Giannis, like he wins a title and he comes back into preseason with like a functionally look like normal looking jumper. I'm like, dude, this guy is like a superhero. Like this is insane. Like yeah. he just disappeared. He didn't play in the Olympics, right?
No, so he just disappears. We were pretty happy.
Which he just, you know, he disappears off the map and he just shows up in preseason. And it's like, oh, of course he did, because that only makes sense that the first thing he's going to do with the confidence of winning a championship is like take on the one thing that everybody's been, you know, giving him hell about is his yeah. bag or whatever. It's just, I don't know, man. It's very cool stuff. And it's, I don't know what they, I really don't know what anybody does with that. If that thing sticks.
Well, and I think it's a good point in like the championship confidence. I think we're hoping it kind of translates to Drew and Chris too.
Yeah, Drew can't play any worse offensively. I'll say that.
That's, they actually, the Bucks broadcast, Marcus Johnson reported on the broadcast, like they had an assistant coach working him with him specifically on like finishes at the basket. Cause people remember the shooting.
Yeah.
Like he just wasn't making layups.
He was blowing
like,
layups.
Just make layups. Like that's, I think it was Adam McGee on the Win and Six pod, part of our podcast network on our feed, was like, oh, you can't expect that much with the perimeter defense he's playing. I was like, just make layups. I don't need him to be James Harden offensively. Just convert the bunnies and I'd be good, Drew. So, yeah, if he can do that, and I don't know, Chris could just like even out a little bit. Like
consistency.
Like, yeah, that's game just six, the, that's Chris could thing. Meet game two, Chris, we'd be pretty good.
Yeah, if we just had like a consistent version of Chris Middleton, because we see the highs keep getting pointed out, like, oh, he can drop 40 in the finals, he can drop 40 in game six or against the Nets. And it's just like a big games, Chris Middleton's going to show up. Like, okay, cool. Like show up for the other ones too. Like it's nice that you show up for like the big games, but it's like, if you got a consistent Chris Middleton experience, you wouldn't be necessarily in these situations as often. And so that's just, that's been the biggest problem. It's like when people want to say like, oh, Chris Middleton is one of like, how does he rank among perimeter players in the NBA or just players in general or wings in the NBA? It's like the biggest downside for him is consistency, because you'll see nights where he's super quiet. And we've been discussing this on our side. It's just a lot of what Drew and Chris do, they don't really have high offensive outputs simultaneously. Like we saw it once, like game five of the finals, like that was incredible. That was, and they win that game handily because Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton are both showing up. In the Nets series, if one of them showed up, the other one wasn't, and you could count on that. That was, you can like set your watch to that. There's a lot of just inconsistencies among those two offensively, and like at some point it's understandable because it's year one of Drew Holiday in that system. So it's like, okay, you need to figure this stuff out, especially Chris Middleton. We know he takes a couple of years to figure some stuff out. Like his first 2 years with Bud, it was a little bit of a back and forth between how he wanted to play offensively. So it just takes time with these players. And we were talking about this in a previous episode. It's just like, that's one thing I'm really looking forward to this season with Milwaukee, is how can Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton coexist offensively? Can they both play to each other's strengths? Can they both hide each other's weaknesses? How does that sort of fit together? Because like you were mentioning earlier, he played awful, Drew Holiday, especially offensively in that Brooklyn series. It was bad. So if you can sort of make it not as bad, like average, that's a big step forward.
And also like just trending a little more offensively. We'll see. I like almost brought up Rodney Hood again. I have a Rodney Hood problem, I think. I need to kick this Rodney Hood addiction I have. But I don't know. I think the Bucks trend a little more offensively. You guys mentioned Grayson Allen as like somebody that can come in there and fill gaps. I've liked Jordan Nwora a lot. Kind of want him to be a rotation guy, which is like, that's some like Doc Rivers level GMing on my part, where I see a guy drop 30 against the team that I'm, you know, coaching or covering or whatever. And I'm like, that guy's a star right there. That's the guy right there.
I need him on my
team. I'm going to sign him in a couple of years, but really like he's got it. I don't know. He's got the irrational confidence, the pull up jumpers there. He's got some like, he's interesting too. He's like a nice kind of off the bench spark that I think the Bucks could use. And it's like, if you're trending offensively more and you're not having these lineups where it's like PJ Tucker and Jeff Teague or whatever, where it's just like, all right, there's two guys that are offering literally nothing offensively. That's going to help a lot with the load that's going to be on Drew and the load that's going to be on Chris, where it's like, we're not just going to get an ISO fest because we know the guys around you aren't doing anything except maybe crashing the glass.
Yeah. I love, the memorial paying tribute to PJ Tucker's offensive rebounding, because that is his
one offensive skill.
There's so many great PJ interview clips. Obviously, We Dogs is legendary, trying to bring it to
Miami. He's great.
He's corny, but one of my favorites was somebody, I don't remember who, if it was a Bucks person or like a national person, but they were like asking him about his offensive output, because he probably scored like 0 or 2 or something. And he scoffed at the idea that he should have to play offense. He's like, do you realize I'm guarding Kevin Durant? Like, no, I'm not going to play offense. And I was like, I love that he's just up front. Like, PJ Tucker is under no illusion that he is like this sniper. Like, I feel like 90% of the players in the league are like, on the right team, I could drop 30 a game.
Yeah.
PJ Tucker's like, absolutely not. I'm here for defense, offensive rebounding, and that's what I do. But yeah, I think offensively, I think the one silver lining of Hood, unfortunately being banged up, and I like the signing too. I sound so low on it now, cause I'm not even low on the signing. I'm low on him, cause he did not look good in his game back. And then he's hurt again, which is just tough for him considering, you know, the way his career has gone. But this is kind of what the Bucks do now. I mean, they blew basically every draft pick besides Brogdon and hopefully DiVincenzo post Giannis, like literally
Sterling Brown.
He didn't help the Bucks. I'm calling it. I mean, it's like going to be pick. It doesn't matter.
He's going to have big moments for the Mavs. I'm feeling good about it.
He finally got in shape. Congrats, Sterling. But he's just so, I just thought he was just going to be a power forward. He's just like, he wasn't out of shape. He was just like big. And he looks very slim now. He looks very slim. Good for Sterling. But they didn't get much out of pretty much any draft pick, especially they were much better in the second round between Brogdon and Sterling than they were in the first. Thon Maker, Rashad Vaughn, DiVincenzo, pretty good, but unfortunately is not sitting on the court. But they this is how they've compensated. What Horace has done is basically just like, how many flyers can I take on guys who aren't necessarily ancient, right? Like Bobby Portis, Grayson Allen, Semi Ojeleye, Rodney Hood, like guys in their 20s who, for whatever reason, injuries or, you know, Portis's case, just, you know, not being on good teams, not having a good defensive reputation, are available. And like, can we get them in the system and convince them to stay and everything else? So that's why I think like their contracts are all just like bets. They're all flyers. Like, if Rodney Hood works, great. We have a rotational player and we're set. And if he doesn't, then we'll Torrey Craig him and try again later at the buyout or something else. But I think Nwora is going to get real opportunities to play early. Your guy is going to – he's. I think he was always probably going to end up in the Bryn Forbes role at least to start for the regular season. But the way the Bucks roster is right now without Portis and Semi and Hood, he might play real rotation minutes and really get to play through some mistakes, which I think will be good for him long term, even if – Bud does freak out and call timeout and cuss him out for missing a switch or something in game 6 of the year. But I'm excited. He's just fun to watch. I mean, when a guy is a flamethrower, how can you not have fun? Just sit back and enjoy the show.
I'm trying to think of like the last guy that was like that for the Bucks. I'm really trying to think.
It's not really been a thing.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. It's a fun little mix like that. And it's funny. Like, I feel
Shabazz
like
Shabazz Muhammad.
You're speaking of my Timberwolves roots right there. Let me tell you right now, Shabazz Muhammad, the only player that I've ever seen that is more reluctant to take a shot with his right hand. It was uncanny. He would not shoot with his right hand. Yeah, it's funny. Like you mentioned that, or I just the talking about him and being a guy that can kind of give you that instant offense. I feel like these teams are like a lot more geared to play each other this year. Like I think the Nets really went in there and said, maybe more than anything is we want to build a team that's constructed to guard the Bucks and guard Giannis. That's why you have like James Johnson is a great example of a guy that they brought in that they specifically are saying, hey, we really hope this works out because we want to throw this guy out there for a bit. Millsap, I mean, I think they're going to bring him in because he's got vet savvy or whatever, but he is a guy you can also throw out there. Blake is somebody I think they retained because they like him and he's like a big, like a very big part of their culture, which is very interesting. Like he's like one of the decision makers on the team now, which is crazy. Well, he's been there for like 6 months.
Well, but is he probably maybe one of the longest tenured guys in the rotation this year?
Yeah, he's it up feels there. Like it's it.
With Harden coming in after, right? Or no, actually, he came in after. Who came in first, Blake or Harden?
Harden was in January. And then
Harden, okay.
Yeah, and then Blake was in March. And then LaMarcus came, I think, in April, from what I remember. I don't know. It was a great – just the whole year last year was just me doing preview content and, like, what guys are going to look like. I don't even think I watched the regular season. It was just me being like, oh, here's a new player. Cool, it's Amon Shumpert. Oh, he's gone. Here's Andre Roberson.
I forgot about Roberson.
Oh my God. It was a weird year. It was a weird Noah Vonleh was a Net for a bit. It was very strange.
I don't even remember that.
Yep. Tyler Cook was a Net for a bit. It was a weird couple of weeks. So they just traded everybody for Harden. So they're just like it's open tryouts basically at that point. So I think it's interesting. They've both kind of trended. I don't know if the Bucks have built for the Nets necessarily, but they brought in more guys that are going to give you a little bit more offensive punch. And then the Nets, it's like, they have guys that are going to try to interrupt the point of attack. So it's like, if the Nets are dropping with Blake Griffin, which is, I don't know how I feel about that. I didn't love it towards the end of the series. Turns out Blake Griffin does not offer a ton of rim protection on lobs, but let's say they're doing that. They now have like not just Bruce Brown, but they have Javon Carter. They have DeAndre Bembry, like guys that are going to get around screens and like bother one of Chris or Drew coming off these pick and rolls with Giannis. It just feels like they've geared up more for the Bucks than anybody. And that includes the Los Angeles Lakers. That's my feel. They're respecting the Bucks as the champs. And for good reason, by the way. Like, I'm going to do this rant. I got to do this real quick. Everybody I don't know. I'm sure you guys have seen it. Like people complaining about the Bucks and they won. It was the path. It's like, here's my thing with that. Everybody had before we got into the Bucks Nets series, everybody said, okay, whoever's winning this series is going to win the finals. And that's what happened. And then everybody said, oh, well, this season's rigged. And it's like, well, isn't what we said was going to happen happened?
Yeah.
And the Bucks won. Like one of the two teams won. And we don't do this in other years. We don't go, oh, well, I don't know. Like, are we sure the Raptors should have won? You know, Clay got injured and KD could have come back. Like, we don't do that. We just say that the Raptors won. Why do we do this for last year? I get it. Like, there were more injuries, but it's like, in the end, we kind of got a team that I think everybody should feel okay about winning. Sorry, I had to get that rant.
No, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. I mean, we're all in on that. And I will say, like, actually, Bucks fans are not a fan of his, but I love James Harden's answer in Media Day. I think when someone asks, something about like the Nets being the team to beat, basically, and like I think that the question that everyone gets asked, like how are you gonna handle being the team to beat? And he's like, we're not the team to beat. Like Milwaukee is the team to beat. And I think part of it was like I don't know. I don't know James Harden personally, of course, but I think it was kind of like just like it's kind of a silly question, but it was just like Bucks fans appreciated it, right? Because there is Bruce Brown, I think, is the one guy actually on the Nets who was like, oh, we know how it would have gone. Okay, Bruce, whatever. guy hit 75% of his floaters and talking about could have been. But no. But I do think, and I think it's kind of, to me, that's how the season looks again. Like I was mad on Twitter the other day, and it wasn't because the Bucks weren't first in title odds, but I was like, at least they should be second, right? Like I think...
Yeah.
Because the team in the other conference has to be second because it's an easier path. I was like, what does it matter if they're going to lose? Like, the team in the other conference is going to lose. like, to the Bucks or the
Nets.
These
are the two best teams in the league.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really a question.
And I think it's that remains like, if the player to who shall not be named never shows up. Like, I still think
100%.
They're still 100%. Like maybe number one.
No, I think they still are number one. I'm still going to say they're number one. It's much closer with Voldemort out, but it's just like, it's like, it is closer, but I still will pick. I still think Brooklyn has the best odds and should have the best odds to win because this roster is insane. Like we've been talking about, like, oh, they lack ball handling. Cool. When at the end of the day, they have James Harden and Kevin Durant, who's going to be taking
it's nuts.
All the ball handling responsibilities when it's playoff time. Like, cool. Like, problem solved. Like, okay, cool. Oh, they can't find Nick Claxton's because they have to play Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap. okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like, these are the problems that we have, like, that this Nets roster has. And it's like, okay, it doesn't matter when it comes to playoff time. Like, the Bucks, they're a very good team. They should be second, but, like, they should be second.
My thing with the Nets remains, like, you might just get unlucky and they're just so hot for any four games out of a series that you just lose. Like, I do think at the end of the day, as long as you have Harden and Durant, right? Like, those guys alone can score like 100 points in a game together. That's on the high side, but easily 80, right? And it's just like, then if you get, you know what, like Joe Harris finally decides to shoot in the playoffs, which is like, that's something that would have absolutely swung that series too. That's just how playoff series are. But it's just like their offense can be so potent that I think you can play almost a perfect game, which the Bucks don't play a lot of perfect games, having watched them a lot. But even if you do play nearly perfect, you can still lose. And that's my thing. That was my thing with Brooklyn last year. I called Bucks every series, but I was like, there's a shot that they play really well and they just lose anyway. And if they don't play well, there's no way they're going to win. And I got that one wrong. But really, it was like, I think the Bucks got a little lucky. The games they didn't play the best, Brooklyn, those were also some of their hotter games. And
yeah,
if you line those up, then you can survive. I think, you know, you play okay in their colder games, you can win. But yeah, I think that's like, we've been talking a lot about the Bucks, and I appreciate that. But my God, this Nets team is just like literally two MVPs. One is probably the greatest scorer ever, certainly in the conversation for that.
Bruce Brown?
Yeah. No, Blake, actually.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
No, and they're just really good. And I think, honestly, this I've been really – and we'll see this year how it is because there's more confounding factors. But, like, Harden and Blake and Durant coming together – Durant was there, but, like, the other guys coming in, and it feels like they kind of built a culture on the fly a little bit and, like, made it work. And I think that's easier when you're as good as they are. But – and, again, we'll see, you know, if things get – choppier this year. It doesn't seem like they're going to. I think that's kind of a cool thing. And a lot of people say, you know, Nash does nothing, whatever. And I'm not going to sit here and argue exactly what he does, but I do think coaching culture is a big thing. That's something I didn't appreciate enough until the Bucks won the title about Budenholzer, especially coming from Kidd. Like, that's a big deal. And like, that's why Giannis stays. That's why you can make it through being down 0-2 and 3-2 to Brooklyn and down 0-2 in the finals and, you know, without Giannis and down 0-1 in the conference finals. Like, they just had such a great culture. I think Nash has done a good job of that. Like, I don't know if he's the number one X's and O's coach in the league, but I think honestly, some of that stuff gets a little overhyped at the end of the day. Like, if your players aren't enjoying playing for you, it's not even really worth anything to be that guy.
And he also might be a great X's and O's coach too. Have you seen?
Yeah, like, I'm not saying he's not.
The way Brooklyn plays, it's like a lot of people just assume, like, watch this. Everyone, like Bucks fans especially listening to this, watch how the Nets play. You assume it's a lot of like, oh, Harden and Durant like in their bag do an isolation shot. No. It's ping, 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 pass, easy cuts, dunks, wide open threes. Because of the way they leverage their spacing and the way they leverage the talents that they have. So Steve Nash might be a great X's and O's coach.
Yeah, and they use – and even this
might
year –
might be the third string point guard too.
We might be playing point together for the Nets soon. No, it's funny. Like, they – even this preseason, they're doing little things using – they have a set now that they're going to open with, and I bet you they open with it for this game. I'll tell you right now. I'm gonna give some
bold prediction.
tidbit to the Bucks coaching staff. which I'm sure are diligently listening to this. Oh, yeah, yeah, they're definitely listening.
Both feeds.
Minute,
both feeds.
Minute 50 right now. They're like, yeah, this is the good stuff right here. That rant he said about the Bucks being rightful champions, we needed that. but they're going to open with a set where it's like a little hand back, and then Harden goes and sets a screen in the corner, and that flows into like a dribble handoff for Joe Harris. And it's like, they're doing little things where I don't even remember that last year. I mean, I'm not saying like James Harden's never set a screen in his life, but they do little things. They're mixing their guys in there. Harden's going to be a screener. And I bet you Harden screens for KD. And then the obvious counter is doing that vice versa, which is something I would love if they would tap into more and put those guys in action together. Like, they are very creative with this stuff. And I think they're just scratching the surface of what they can do. Like for me, one of the big ones is, if they can use Joe Harris and James Harden in like a pick and pop together. I mean, I'm sure you guys remember that I think it was on MLK Day, the game against the Bucks. They went to that specific action, I think like 3 or 4 times in the fourth quarter. And it was just like, they got something good every single time against the Bucks. And that was with Drew like covering it, like, and doing an okay job. There's all these little wrinkles that I don't even feel like they've explored. I mean, there's actions where they can have James Harden out there, and let's say they do. I mean, they did a little bit in their last preseason game where they have James Harden coming off a pair of screens, Nick Claxton's rolling to the rim, Patty Mills is tapping out to three. And it's just like, there's all these little things that they can do. And a lot of it comes down to what Harden can do as a passer. Like, it's just, they've tapped into that in a way that, I mean, it's tough to keep. It's hard for me to watch. Like, sometimes I'm like, I don't even know how he just did that. I can't imagine Guardy.
Yeah, I think what was one of the most exciting moments for us was just seeing the Bucks get a little bit more inventive and fun with some offensive play calling. Mm. Rohan, what's the correct term for the play? You know, I'm going to talk about the.
Was it a
double drag?
Yeah, it was a high double drag. Yeah.
Yeah, so cool. Chris handling the ball, Giannis and Drew setting the screens, and then it flows. Chris hits Drew with a nice pocket pass in the paint, and then he hits Pat in the corner.
I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Steve Jones Jr. of the Dunker Spot was like, whoa, they're finally doing stuff. And I was like, yeah, I hope they continue to do some stuff. Like,
and that's going to be important, because that's a switch beater right there.
Yeah.
That is exactly what that is designed to do. And that's a lot of what the Nets like to do.
Yep.
In certain schemes especially against Milwaukee, we saw them switch so much against the Bucks. They're just finding ways to like, okay, how do we leverage this in our advantage? And again, like, Brooklyn's going to react to that. They're going to change up their coverage. It's a chess match. That's why, like, we're talking about this in the sense of a playoff series, because like, this is going to happen again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to just like,
I think they'll play pretty hard in the opener.
Yeah.
Like, I think this will be competitive
as well. Yeah.
Oh, I do too. For sure.
This will be really competitive, because I think the Nets are going to want to come out there and spoil ring night. And then conversely, the Bucks, I mean, this is just, it's a rivalry now. Like, we can call it what it is.
It's going to be this the entire season, because both of these teams, I know Zach Lowe's been really talking about this a lot, they're just primed for FU seasons, both of these teams.
Yep.
Because the Nets are like, okay, we have our guys, let's go show the world who we are. And the Bucks are like, hey, we're not like a fluke. We're going to show you who we are, and we're going to keep getting better. So both of these two teams are like I said earlier, the best two teams in the league. They're just primed to just shock the world while also meeting, like, they're on a collision course. And we have a couple more months to wait. I don't know how many months. I can't do math. I can, but I don't want to.
I don't know. Like, I don't remember when the playoffs are, because of all the weird schedule years.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea.
It's in April, right? Late April.
It could start in 2 weeks. I wouldn't know anymore. I'm fried.
I think it's late April.
I think it starts. The important part of the playoffs starts in May, I believe.
Yes. Yeah.
Late April is when you sweep garbage teams, or, you know, whoever else is.
I'll remember when.
Don't talk about the Charlotte Hornets like that. That's not nice.
Just bringing it back. Both of our franchises used to be like that. That's what we would get excited for.
I would love if Charlotte made it. I don't know why they didn't extend Bridges, though. I got a quibble with that.
That's true.
I hear clutch guys almost never take the rookie extension. I don't know why.
Is he a clutch guy?
He is a clutch guy.
I didn't realize
that. He is a clutch guy.
Of course.
Of course, it makes
it harder. For this game in particular, I think the most tenuous part for me for the Bucks is like if Lopez gets in foul trouble or Giannis, we might see Sandru Mamukelashvili play in this game.
I'm ready.
That's where we're at. Like, we might have real Mamu minutes.
I'm ready.
Like Thanasis is going to play a little bit, but like in terms of true bigs, like without Portis, and the reason I didn't get back to this earlier because we've been bouncing around like the Nets offense, hopefully like the Bucks offense a little bit this year, is every time the Bucks are asked about like the not having another true center or being a smaller roster, the first thing they say every time is like, oh, we're going to have like, we got Shemmy for this. Like Shemmy is going to be like a 4/5 even, which I'm very interested to see because they never would play small usually.
Yeah.
But he's not going to play. So, you know, Thanasis is going to get minutes at the 4. Wara, maybe he'll size up to the 4. Certainly cannot size up to the 5. So I think the default is going to be Giannis and Lopez staggering minutes as the 5s and then only not playing together as much, which is fine. I mean, Brook Lopez, obviously still a very capable offensive 5, and he showed that right in the playoffs enough times, and a damn good defender too, even if he's not, you know, Nick Claxton in space or anything like that. But if one of those guys got in foul trouble or, you know, did something, couldn't play as much, I think you might see some Mamu at the 5, which, talk about a baptism by fire. Like, it's going to be out there with KD and Harden. Although, in the preseason, he was 20 and 11. Kane Pittman reminded me, hey, he's ready for this. I said, oh, okay, start him.
The nastiest shot of the game. He hit that little up fake.
Oh, yeah.
Spin move. I was like, what is going on here?
Double spin? Yeah.
He followed that with two of the worst games you've seen. So my confidence.
It was a rough experience.
Let me Doc Rivers GM this. I'm ready. Start him. speaking of, like, what is their, because I have this in my notes. What is the Bucks' best small 5? Like the best small ball 5. I'm assuming with Giannis at center.
Yeah.
Because it's Drew, Middleton, and then is it Grayson and Pat?
Or you might have George Hill in there.
George Hill in there? I don't know.
We'll see when Semi shows up. When Semi shows up, if he can get into that, just offering a little more defense in some of those options. So I'll say by the end of the year, I think it's still TBD. Like, I think they have a lot to try out and mess around with. Like, the Bucks are known now as regular season tinkerers. So I think they're just going to tinker away. I will say for this game, Pat at the 4 is what they're going to go with. Because honestly, he's better there than at the 2.
He's like, so much better at the 4 than at the 2.
He's stronger than he is fast, to put it that way. Like, honestly, like, I don't hate the way he guards KD. He's just too small. Like, he just can do nothing about the shot.
But I,
like,
hate the way he guards KD.
Like, the way he goes about it, I don't hate. But it's just like, if he was 3 inches taller, he'd actually be an okay, like, one of the guys to throw at him on the long list. As is, it's just like, he gives up too much. Like, you have to be a superhuman defender like Drew to even do anything. And Pat's not that good. But, like, I remember the Hawks kept going to Gallo on him. And Gallo was hitting some shots on him. But it was like, he had to hit, like, turnaround jumpers. And it's like, okay, you can hit turnaround jumpers on anyone.
Can't move him.
Yeah, like, you can't move Pat. So I think they're going to go with Pat and, like, have him guard, like, the Blakes and James Johnsons of the world. And just – I also think part of it, too, is especially against the Nets, that the Bucks are not too worried about that. Is, like, if the Nets devolve into James Johnson or Blake Griffin or even LaMarcus posting up Pat when even one of KD or Harden is out there, You'll take it every time. Like, that's a win. So, yeah, I think Pat at the 4 and then the other – I think Grayson, too, will be the default. He's been the starter with the starters all preseason. So I think that would be the 5 for the small ball for now. With Portis could factor in there, too, eventually. But with him out and everyone else,
Portis is just why he didn't play in the end of the Brooklyn series. He was just getting picked on too much. And
Prove more sense then. Believe in Bobby, Rohan.
I believe in Bobby, but, like, there's some things you can't change. So I don't know. I'll be hopeful. Okay, Ty, if that makes you happy. I'll be hopeful, but I'm not penciling him in there as of right now. So it's probably, it's either going to be Drew, Chris, Grayson, Pat, Giannis, or it's going to be Drew, Chris, George Hill, Pat, Giannis. But Pat is definitely going to be in there.
All right. Is that, and that's probably their best lineup also to close.
I don't know.
Going small, or is Brooke in there?
Pencil it. Brooke might be in there. I think
that's really Brooke looked in preseason. I mean, it's pretty preseason.
Pretty good. Sprier than we expected.
That's what mainly what I wanted to know. Cause I was like, what does it look like? 70-day off season. Brooke's kind of, you know.
Well, and the funny thing is, last regular season, he looked really slow. And I tried to hold out for as long as I could. The people in the Brooke Lopez's wash camp, they were giving me Brooke Lopez's wash reading materials. That was our running joke. I refused to read them, but I didn't throw them away. They were on my coffee table. And then I read them and I bought in. And then in the playoffs, he's great again. So he obviously has, you know, athletic limitations. But I think I would imagine their default would probably be to play him unless the Nets go ridiculously small and he's just like way too stretched out. Just because he's like, he's just damn good. And it's not ideal with Giannis. It's really not. Brooke and Giannis, they try to fit with each other better. It's not a seamless fit, but like talent wins out at the end of the day. And Brooke is just like better than Pat. And, you know, they just go with that whenever they can. They went away from it by the end of Phoenix, but I would think he or Pat probably. And I think 60-40 Brooke. What do you think, Rohan?
I feel like it depends a lot on how the game really goes. If the Nets are really, really killing the Bucks in terms of like abusing like a drop scheme, which, you know, you kind of have to go to a lot of the times with Brooke Lopez, though we've seen him do switching here and there in the preseason. And it's had mixed results. We'll say that.
It tends to.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Bucks keep throwing it out there, and it's like, it's what I just don't know if this is going to happen.
I'm kind of
it's
a believer.
Just what happens with Brooke Lopez.
Deceptively long.
I forgot about that. I think it depends on how the game's going. If the Nets are attacking him, he's not going to be out there. If the Nets aren't abusing him, he's going to be out there.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. You want to default. So I'll say they default to Brooke out there to close games, but if he's proving that it's like he's a detriment, then he's not going to be out there.
Yeah.
They have other options to go to.
Well, the Nets are switching LaMarcus, so it's like anything is possible right now. It's been interesting.
If LaMarcus and Brooke are playing together, I wonder if they're just going to make a gentleman's agreement. Like, hey, no matter what happens, let's just always end up on each other.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We can try to post each other up, but like we'll switch onto each other. Yeah, we'll fade to the side every play and be like, let's just come on, man. It's what month
we're
is it? It's
old.
October. It's October. We don't need to do all this stuff. We'll save that for the playoffs. That's what I would do if I was. I said, LaMarcus, come here. I got an idea. I have a quick hitter for you.
Yep.
Are you in on Ken Thomas, like everyone on Nets Twitter that I see?
I like him in a really specific role this year.
Yeah.
I want him next to Harden. I do not want Cam Thomas making decisions for the offense. Cam Thomas took one of I was like cackling when he took the shot. They had a 3-on-2 transition possession, and it swings to him. They've got 20 seconds left on the shot clock. Instead of like either resetting or driving into the teeth of the defense, he takes like a sidestep and he gets like, he covers, and again, credit to him, he gets so much ground when he moves laterally. It's like, it's just, I mean, it's a huge part of his game is that he can cover so much ground on the sidestep, but he takes a sidestep three in transition. There's like, it's a 3-on-2. He's like falling over while taking the shot. It goes like off the front rim. And I'm like, that's where we need to reel it in a little bit.
Yeah.
So I love Cam Thomas in terms of like, I think he's super entertaining. There is a lot of like real scoring chops there. In the same way, kind of with Jordan Nwora, where it's like you do feel like you need to reel it in here and there. But like if you put him in the right spots, I think it looks really good. So next to Harden, that's a guy they're going to run a pick and roll. Defense converges, especially if it's somebody like Nick Claxton. You have your help defender coming over. And then maybe the guy that's covering Cam Thomas at the opposite wing has to bump down to the corner. You know, Harden manipulates that pass because it kicks it back up to the wing with Cam Thomas. That's where I like him because he's just making decisions from there. He's saying, great, I'm going to go up with this shot, or great, I'm going to beat my one defender trying to sprint back over to me and either draw contact or go to the rim. Like, I just, that's where he has a lot of equity, because he can create his own shot. Like, it's a legitimate skill that really, really matters, and matters in big games, and will matter until he who shall not be named, maybe, maybe not, returns to basketball. We don't know. So I think they need that. Like, I mentioned the ball handling, and like, that's something that needs to be solved. But the also the isolation scoring matters too, because they don't have a ton of that either, which is weird to say with a team with Kevin Durant and
it's like the same problem the Warriors had, realistically.
When Barbosa got old and they just like didn't have that other guy anymore.
So it's like, I think he has a spot, but it's all about what he can do and the opportunities he's given and what lineups he's used in, really. Like, it's like, he is kind of what the Nets make of him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think Wara with the starters actually didn't look great in his one preseason start when Giannis was actually playing. And I think it's a little bit of like, you know, when he's playing in summer league or with the Nigerian team, which did not have any shot creation or point guards, the one thing they really didn't have, or even in some of these preseason games when no one else played, like, it was like, okay, Jordan Wara, like, just go score. There's no one else on the team that can score. It took him a little bit to adjust to structure. So it might even be good for Cam Thomas to come in if he's playing a little bit more with some of these other guys and just learning to play off of guys, which would seem like it's just very easy. But I do think it's an adjustment for some of these. If they come in as, you know, the top dog leading scorer on the team, it's kind of hard to be like, okay, how do I be the third, fourth option on the floor? But I do think it's a great start. Like, put him in advantage situations and just let him cook. That's a good way to ease him in. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I was kind of looking because I wanted to ask about a young guy. We got to talk about Wara a little bit. And obviously, of course, the Nets, even more than the Bucks, are going to be a team that kind of builds year by year to some extent and fills out the rotation. But like, if they could keep Javon Carter long term, that's an interesting one. And then really, it's like pretty much Cam Thomas and not a whole lot. I guess Bembry, if Bembry, you know, acquits himself well, he's not the oldest guy, but it's always interesting to look at, like, who are the young guys who are going to stick around for more than a couple of years
on these teams? Bruce Brown going to stick around?
Yeah, no. That was going to be my next question.
Because he signed his qualifying offer, right?
That's a bold move.
I did a column today, and I had to make two bold predictions. I had A, that Javon Carter will be a starter by the end of the year, or if you know.
Yeah, yeah, bold boy.
Doesn't come back. I think he could be a starter. And I said, at the expense of Bruce Brown, who I think falls pretty far down the rotation. And I think part of that is like, they are a team now. They have a bunch of guys that kind of do what he does or did last year, where it's like, you know, you have to think about, this is the kind of the way I'd frame it, is like the Nets last year, they traded away all of their depth. So all of their guys that are like, their 10th, 11th men suddenly are bumped up to being like 7th, 8th. I'm not saying Bruce like was it, because he was actually really good in that role. Like, he looked really good. I think he's a very good player and that fit really well in the system they were running. But this year, the team is different. They have a bunch of guys that do his role. And it's like, if you're running James Johnson and or DeAndre Bembry next to Bruce Brown, I just don't think you can survive with those lineups as good as your stars are. Like, I don't think you're optimizing your team in the right way. So in a way, it's like, yeah, those guys probably won't play a ton. But even in the lineups where it's like, if he's playing next to somebody like LaMarcus Aldridge or, you know, Nicholas Claxton, those guys are going to take most of your pick and roll reps. You want, you know, LaMarcus setting a screen and fading, and you want Nick setting a screen and you know, kind of charging to the rim. And that relegates by circumstance. It sends Bruce Brown to the corner. So everything that he was so effective with last year, which was really setting screens, getting into the middle of the paint in that area where bigs are not really sure, do we step up, do we not? He's not going to have those by the circumstance of not being there. So then it's like, you have to replace your impact with cutting and with offensive rebounding. It's like, and I just think there's going to be guys that can do that better on the roster, honestly, like that are bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, it's like, yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at with him, is like, and I could be, that's one of those predictions where I'm like, I'm gonna go on record with it, and I'm probably really wrong in like a month, but like, that was one of my big takeaways just throughout kind of, I guess, not even preseason, but just sort of thinking about the team is like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that guy was really essential last year, and he was great for what they do. And I think if he plays, he'll be really effective, but this is a different team this year. It's not built for Bruce Brown anymore. It's built to, you know, be an actual functional large basketball team now. you can't just go through. I mean, that's kind of the thing. You can't, I don't know if you can survive four rounds of the playoffs with a team that's that small and that kind of like, we're just going to score a bunch and just hope for the best, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, certainly, especially knowing, and I think this goes back to the earlier point about these teams building for each other, knowing that, you know, the Bucks won last time for a lot of reasons, but one of them was like, they're going to just demolish us on the boards. Yep. And so if we score 30% more points, they're taking 40% more shots and we lose. And that's just, that's, I don't think that math actually holds up, but whatever the math is, that was what happened. And I think what I'm a little worried about for Bruce Brown's sake, though, is like, I don't know how many teams where he could join and look as good as he did last year on the Nets. Like, I do think he's kind of one of those players that needs to just be around some other really skilled offensive players. So
the Hawks, there's a good one.
That's what I was thinking.
But they have a million guys.
True. They do.
They have too many players.
That's they do have too many guys.
They're going to consolidate it, though. That's a prediction.
They're going to have to trade five for one and get Giannis for their whole starting lineup or something. If they're going to – I don't know. But I don't know if they offered him a deal, but I think like Bruce Brown – I think just Brooklyn was a good fit. Although if he's going to potentially lose his spot, as you say, maybe it wasn't and it was the right thing for him. But I just thought that was – you just don't see the qualifying offer signed all that often. I mean, it's like – Zion is pre-threatening it or whatever. I don't think he's going to do it. But it just interested me. So I'm glad you asked Rohan about that.
Yeah. Here's a quick hitter for both of you. We've been talking a lot about this season, but like we've talked about this game as well, obviously that's going to be kicking off the NBA season. This is a staple of mine. Give me a score prediction.
Oh, he loves the score predictions.
Score predictions make me so, especially an opener. I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Oh boy, I think the Nets like won by like 30 last year. How does basketball work? How high do these games get?
It's been a while. These two teams, they can get pretty high
or pretty very low. Yeah. I think I'll just go for. I never put. Matt's gonna think about it and like really endeavor to be. I don't. I just throw out numbers.
Ty's just fed up.
I just placate Rohan. I'm going to say 117 to 114 Bucks, of course. It's not super high because I think that's the Bucks' path to winning, is it not being crazy high. But I think the way the team is built right now, it's got to be kind of high because the Bucks, I think in the same way the Knicks kind of did, shifted toward offense a little bit. I think for different reasons. I think the Knicks are like, I don't know if teams are going to shoot 30% against us from three forever. I think the Bucks were like, four of our starters are really great on defense, and our offense got gummed up all playoffs, so maybe we can lean toward that and find a better balance. So I think the Bucks offense should be better, although, again, they're missing guys, but 117-114.
That's pretty good. And also, like, they have guys where you can't just, like, gap off them. Like, you can't just, like, help off Grayson Allen, for example, if he's sitting. Like, it's I don't know. That part I like what the Bucks did. Score prediction. Because this offseason has just been so dramatic for the last 2 weeks, I don't know how you guys are. Like, maybe you enjoy drama. I guess you're not, maybe not, but I can't stand it. Like, I honestly, it's so funny, like, being a media member or whatever, people are like, oh, he must love this. He must love all the Kyrie drama. It's so many stories he can write. It's like, no. I hate this just as much as the rest of you. Like, I just want to write about film and talk about stats. Like, I don't want to have to do a Kyrie Irving emergency, whatever podcast or whatever I'm doing every single 6 hours. So because it's been so dramatic and ridiculous, I feel like the Nets are going to lose by like 20 and we're going to have to do this big existential, like, oh, the locker room's off. And oh, it's because of this preseason. It's going to turn all like think tanky. And it's just, I'm just expecting that. So because it's just, I can't have a moment of peace from this damn Nets team. I think they lose by like 15, maybe. Yeah, I'll say 15. I'll go as far as 20. But I think it'll be 15 and there will be videos going around. Oh, is the chemistry off? Blah, blah, blah. It just feels like that's going to happen.
I like it. I like
Rohan,
it.
What's yours?
I think this is going to be close. Like I said, both these teams are primed for FU seasons. It's just I think they're really going to go at it in this game. Both of them have, like, whether they want to admit it or not, they have, like, things to prove against each other. These are just the titans of the NBA, and, like, the Bucks are going to be fueled for getting their rings. The Nets are going to be fueled by seeing the Bucks get their rings. It's like, especially like Harden. Harden's never won a title. Like, he's gonna be pissed about this. He's gonna want it. And, like, credit to him, he's a competitor. I think this is an OT game.
Oh,
honestly.
No. Oh wow.
I don't know if I have it in me.
Dude, I don't
have it in me, but I think it might happen.
I've readjusted my sleep schedule. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that, man. I'm sleepy right now. Let's go. What if I could do an OT game?
Let's go 128-126 in OT, Milwaukee.
You're trying to dust me the first game of the year. I'm not ready for it. I think if the Nets get blown out, like you said, Matt, I'm gonna personally call in the first take and allege that if Kevin Durant was a true leader, he would have gotten New York law changed, and then they could have won the game. So that's my plan for the next morning if that happens. But do you have any quickfire Bucks questions? Because I feel like we've been pelting you with Nets questions. Do you want to shoot off any of your own?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a regular season game, but, like, I guess my main thing would be this is a very long-winded question. This is going to get long responses from us as we're trying to do the predictions and tail this thing off. Do we think either team's going to make adjustments or anything like that for this specific game or not really? Are there even any?
I think a little. I don't know. I just think I'd be more interested almost in seeing if the Nets, like, how much the Nets want to show. Because I think the Bucks, just like they really are changing. It seems like their offense, they're kind of going to overhaul it a little bit. They're actually going to run more and integrating Grayson and everything. And since they're without so many rotation guys, like, I don't know how many pivots they have in them. Like, I think they might just be trying stuff for a lot of it. I think the most interesting part to watch in terms of that will really be, I think they're going to switch all along. Are they switching Brook all along or not? Because they've been switching a lot, even in the preseason. And when, like, their default was always dropped. So to see them seem to default toggle more to switching was interesting. And just seeing, like, how much does Brook play? What does Brook do? Because I think that's one of their biggest, like, questions in any given matchup. So,
right.
Like, if Brook is healthy and doesn't play, like, a good amount of minutes, I think that'd be an interesting thing for me to look at and go, wow, even without their forward depth, they're still going smaller.
Yeah. I feel like they figured it out though with Brook. Like, play him at the level. Don't play him.
Yeah.
Like, don't obviously don't, like, hard hedge him or anything like that. But, like, play him at the level. I feel like that was kind of what they needed to do. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't change away from it. The thing for me is, sorry to cut you off, but I just the only thing I'm watching for is if the Nets go, like, double big or anything like that. Dude, weird lineups there. Are we gonna see, like, a Claxton LaMarcus lineup? Are we going to see anything like that? That's pretty much all I'm watching for in this game. It's like, do they try to size up in a way, or are they just going to sort of roll out regular rotations?
Do you think, would they go the opposite? Do they ever do, like, Bruce Brown, Patty Mills, Joe Harris, Harden, and KD, and really, like, put KD at the five? I mean, this might really not be the team for that. Like, that's really, that's very boom or bust against the Bucks, right? Like, if maybe you stretch them out and it goes really well, but Milwaukee's rebounding would just be stupid against that group.
Yeah, and I also don't know if I see the upside as much this year. Yeah. Because then the Bucks can just go, like, all right, we're going to put our Grayson Allen, George Hill lineup in and try to go, like,
yeah,
we're going to try to put our own shooter lineup in here.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if you're winning that game as much. I think you kind of, I mean, maybe that is just a game of counters. You're going to go switch back and forth between those things. But I don't know. I don't know if they're going to, like, try to do that necessarily.
Yeah. And especially with the Bucks, we don't see a ton of, like, in-game chess matches. We see a lot of game-to-game chess matches like we saw in the postseason. So I think the extent of what we see in this game from the Bucks perspective is just getting at what Ty was talking about, is like how they manage, like, Brook Lopez or, like, any other player who's struggling in whatever scheme they decide to run out there, whether it's they just default to switching now or they just, like, drop, or, like you said, Matt, they can't hard hedge with Brook. But if they're hard hedging, they won't even have Bobby or Shemmy. So, yeah, if you're switching or dropping.
Right.
So that's the only in-game adjustment I can really see happening.
it's also regular season. Like, I don't know if they're going to do that. If they are doing like crazy in-game adjustments, I'm like, oh, these teams like really care. Like they really want to.
Like they both of these teams wake up for massive games, and this is a massive game.
Yeah, I mean, the games in the regular season last year were amazing.
Yeah,
like amazing. And I was looking through film. This is what I did in the offseason. So much for taking time off. I was looking through footage of the regular season games to put something together for something I was doing. But they played hard. There were like in-game chess matches. We had the KD getting guarded by Giannis in the regular season. That was pretty fun, which we just weren't expecting. So I'm like, I'm kind of prepared for anything. I'm expected for some like weirdness because we got that a little bit last year.
Yeah, the big question will be like, what Bucks player now will KD's bodyguard go after now that PJ's gone? Who's going to take that mantle? But I think they played kind of like, I think they had four games total against the Nets in Philly. The Bucks did like later last year. And did they split the Nets games and win both Sixers games? Was that it? I didn't think they beat the Nets. And I might be remembering the sequence wrong, but I do remember after a very up and down year for the Bucks, that stretch of games was when I was like, oh, they could win the title. Like they can really hang with these teams. Back when even I took Philly seriously for a moment, which is always a mistake. That's an unserious franchise.
That's a funny joke.
That's that was silly of me. But to see the Nets, like just seeing the Bucks hang with the Nets a little bit with, I don't know. I don't remember how many of the guys Brooklyn had, but you just felt like they could do it. Like even though I think Brooklyn is favored for a reason, all the star power and firepower, like you just like they can hang around. They can really like make it a game. And I think that I do hope it's a close game as much as a blowout would be calming on ring night. Like I enjoy watching for me,
not for me.
Sorry.
I'll toil away.
You're a journalist. You love this.
I love the drama.
Come on, you're a media member.
Look, this is what I live for. I'd sit in my little dark cave and I'm like, ooh, I hope they lose. Oh, I hope Kyrie Irving shows up into the arena uninvited. And
IG live.
He goes on IG live.
IG live in the stands.
He takes the mic from Giannis and does a big, I'm going to quit this joke. I'm going to get myself in trouble here, but he does a big spiel about his views or something.
He pulls a Kanye.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to let you finish. But
Kanye had a much more coherent, like sensible point in that rant than the last thing I'll say. I know we said we wouldn't talk about it.
Oh, by the way, Ty, the Bucks won all four of those games.
They did. Okay. So they won all four. So
yeah I was thinking that I remember the Nets losing.
You know what it was? I don't think the Nets played guys. One of them might've been the thing. I don't think they played.
Harden was out.
No Harden.
I think one of them they were pretty healthy. I thought one of them the Nets didn't.
No, Harden was out for both of them.
Okay. Nick Claxton played 5 minutes the second game. Why I know that, I don't know. That's how my brain works.
But no, that's run of games. Like just seeing like the Bucks hang with the Nets like that was so encouraging, even without Harden,
which would
unfortunately be foreshadowing.
Yeah, big time foreshadowing. Yeah.
But no, I think I'm excited. Now I'm like excited again. I'm kind of pissed that we're recording this Monday night because I'm ready to just segue right into the game. Like it's later at night. I'm a little tired, but this is how I
get. You're tired.
An hour later for you. That's true. But this is how I get. Like that's why I try not to think about previews too much because I'm just like, I want it. Now I want the game. But yeah. I think I can wait another 20 hours or whatever.
Yeah, I'm stoked. Just getting into the year will be nice. Like the buildup of it has just been like it is. I don't know, man. It's funny how much like an off season, like this is going to sound ridiculous, but like, it really does make it seem like a long time. I'm like, oh yeah, this is like a long time without basketball. I kind of forgot how this works. Like I'm actually like want to watch the sport again. This is great. Like this is cool, man.
Yeah. I think even the shortened one was needed after the insane bubble run and then season. It was too much.
Yeah. So I'm excited to get back. Well, do we have anything else? Any other things we want to hit on? I mean, I think we talked about.
I think we're all good here. All of us are looking forward to this matchup. We're looking forward to this season. It's going to be a great season. This was awesome. This was a fantastic conversation.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Let's do plugs. Matt, you can go ahead and go for it. Can people find you? The podcast, if you're listening on the Eurostep feed, give them all the spoon feed them the instructions.
So open up your phone, type your passcode. No, I'm just kidding. So my podcast is the Clear Out Podcast. It's through Blue Wire Podcast. So that's exciting. New venture for me. Excited about that. And it's available on all podcast streaming platforms, Nets podcasts. I have a bunch of different people on, variety of Nets guests, guests obviously that are covering other teams. There's a lot planned. I'm going to do a lot with this thing. I'm like just kind of getting my feet set with this. You know, I feel like Giannis right now. I'm shooting on the way up. So it's like, I'm kind of figuring out, I'm like, oh, this is pretty fun. I get to just have whoever on. This is great.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where you can find me. And then you can find me on Twitter, Matt Brooks NBA. I do a lot of video breakdown stuff. I can write sentences. That's something I can do as well. Sometimes it's
more difficult than you think.
Depends what day it is, but some days I do that. But yeah, so you can find it all there.
And if you are listening to this on the Clear Up feed and you want to hear about all of the fun Eurostep goodness, follow the Eurostep Podcast Network on your podcast platform. I'm sure. Make sure you subscribe to both feeds. Like, come on.
Five stars. Five stars.
Five star review.
Give me a rating.
Apple.
If it's less than five,
no, save not it. Just a rating. Now. Five stars.
You got to be five star. You can hate the show, and people do this. Give it five stars and write about how much you dislike it. We'll work on that. But if it's not five stars, it's not. It's nothing.
We take it as an unserious review.
Yeah, it's the Philadelphia 76ers to podcast reviews. Nobody wants to be that. Sorry, Rohan. Continue. My bad.
No, you're all good. You can follow me on Twitter at RKATTIJR. You can follow Ty on Twitter at TIWINDISCH on Twitter. Follow Eurostep Podcast on Twitter at Eurostep Podcast, GYRO. Check out all of our stuff. Make sure you subscribed again to both feeds. This was a fantastic conversation. I'm glad we could do this.
Thank you guys for joining me.